This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. As I point across the room and see Carrie Kasem is still not here. She always says that I manage her life, and I can't manage her life if she's not here. She is not AWOL, for those of you who listen to the show only to hear Carrie's voice, and it is a sexy, seductive voice at that. Today, she is still in Vegas, and we've had to do a few shows without her. I like to say she's on assignment. I'm really not sure what that assignment is, but hopefully in the next week or two, she will be back, and she will tell us exactly what she was doing in Vegas and missing all of the shows, interesting shows, really great shows that she's missed. A couple weeks ago with Gloria Allred, that was a really interesting show, and I wanted to talk about something today that Carrie may not have a lot of experience because she isn't a lawyer. She just plays one on the radio, and she may not know exactly how big law firms work and how internet law works and how business works. But she obviously has opinions because she's been giving me her opinions for the last 5 years. And frankly, it's kind of nice right now that I don't have to hear them. No, I'm just kidding, Carrie. If you're listening to the show, I miss you. And hopefully you'll be back next week. I want to introduce our first guest. But before I do, I just want to tease the second part of the show because it's really something that not a lot of people talk about. And you may be shocked to hear what we are going to talk about in the second half hour. We're going to talk about a film that has won so many awards. Last year at the Toronto Film Festival, TIFF, as we like to call it, for those of us who are in the know. And I am going to be in Toronto, actually, in the next week or so. So, but just before Film Festival, the film is called Tel Aviv on Fire. And in the second half hour, we're going to have Sameh Zoabi, who is the director of the Tel Aviv on Fire film. And it is a very interesting film about a man who is a Palestinian who is working on a soap opera in Israel. And it's actually kind of a comedy. It's something that you can smile about in this very difficult and complex political situation. Tel Aviv on Fire is something that you can get entertained by, and so many people have been entertained by it. The young Palestinian man named Salam becomes a writer on a popular soap opera, and he has a chance meeting with an Israeli soldier, which really gets his career going, and then a lot of stuff happens. We're going to find out how it was to make a film about Palestinians and Israelis and soap operas. So you don't want to miss that. But you don't want to miss the next half hour either, because I have sitting in front of me a fine looking young man who has a smile on his face because he's doing some really great work for a lot of law firms, lawyers, and of course, the clients, businesses who require, let's just say, inexpensive legal advice. In this world of very expensive legal work, it harkens back to when we had Laura Wasser on the show, and she created It's Over Easy. Laura Wasser, of course, is a very well-known celebrity divorce attorney. She handles more than celebrities, but she says, if you don't want to pay my rate of whatever it was, $750 or $800 an hour, there's an alternative, and it's called It's Over Easy, and you can get divorced for pretty cheap, like the value of maybe an hour or two of her fees. And I think when I talk to Arya Feruzmond, he will tell us a little bit about how that concept has brought so much attention to getting legal work done for not the crazy big firm costs. First of all, Arya, I want to welcome you to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. And, you know, I talk about you being young. You've been practicing for how many years?
Looks like 4 years now. Time flies.
That's it?
That's it.
How the heck do you get involved in such an amazing company called Biz Counsel after 4 years of being a lawyer?
Well, the story starts, I guess, like most young lawyers in the 20 minutes that we have to ourselves in any given day at a big law firm. We try to plan our escape, and we spend most of our waking hours trying to think, what else can we do besides work at a big firm? And
Wait, you found that out as soon as you got into
the
big firm?
That was day two.
Orientation
was day one. That was great. We went to a nice lunch. Day two, I was looking for the way out.
But let me ask you something, because so many people dedicate so much of themselves when they go through law school, go through college, you know, right the LSATs, get into law school. It's such anticipation, and you're telling me on day two you were ready to get out.
You know what it is a lot of law school, you just put your head down, you put your nose to the grindstone, you're trying to get to the end, and you get to the end and you kind of run into the paradigm that everyone tells you to do. Go to a big firm, start working, get the billable hour done. But you don't realize until you step out of it, like I've stepped out of it for a few years, that there's a ton of opportunity to involve yourself in a lot of different aspects of the law that are kind of adjacent, that are really exciting. And that's some of the stuff that I'm involved in.
You know, I give you a lot of credit, Arya, because the fact is that so many people go through that thought process, maybe in day two, maybe in day four, in year one, in year two, and 25 years go by and they're looking back at their life and saying, why didn't I do something else rather than hit my head against the wall as a lawyer?
Of course, yeah. I joke with people, with young lawyers who come up to me and say, how did you do it? And I said, the quickest way to become a partner is to quit your day job and to start a new firm and call yourself partner. So you got to do that early on, and it gets a lot easier from there.
So tell us how it all happened, because Biz Counsel has a lot of powerful people involved. Before we got in there, we talked about Bob Shapiro, who was on our show last year, and we talked about, you know, of course, he's famous for LegalZoom, and we talked about the Brent Shapiro Foundation, which we can mention again. Now, he's been involved with Biz Counsel. Brian Liu, co-founder and CEO of LegalZoom as well. Brian Lee, not to be confused with Brian Liu, also involved. A lot of major players. You are the chief customer experience officer.
Correct.
Dealing with these guys who apparently have spent many years developing a lot of other companies that have really blossomed. In fact, Brian Liu was involved in The Honest Company, and a lot of people know The Honest Company. I coached my son's baseball with Sean Kane, who was also a partner in The Honest Company. Do you know Sean, by the way?
No, I don't.
Okay, so he was a partner in The Honest Company with Brian Liu and Jessica Alba.
Sure.
He has since moved on and has built a new company. And that's exactly what's been going on with Brian Liu and Brian Lee and Bob Shapiro. And here you are, right in the mix. How
right
did
in the
it
mix.
Happen?
The story is a little bit not as exciting as it seems on the surface. When I was at my firm, we actually were looking to start a predecessor company. I was doing a lot of insurance bad faith work, doing a lot of plaintiff side long-term disability cases, life insurance cases, property insurance cases. And the one thing that we saw was people would come to us and say, oh my God, there are lawyers that specialize in this. There are lawyers that can do this on contingency. And I talked to what turns out to be another one of our co-founders, Kurt Brown, a good buddy of mine for a long time. I said, hey, we should connect these people and get them to the right attorneys, because young attorneys like me, we're good at technology. We're good at figuring out the systems. But you want someone with a little bit of white hair on top to be able to take it the distance and be that muscle when it goes to trial. So we knew that our role would be to get them to the right resource.
Right.
And we were just bouncing this idea around and coming up with business plans. And I said, you know what, why don't I just email the founders of LegalZoom and see if they'd be interested in talking to us? And lo and behold, I got a response from Brian Liu, and
Wait a second, you just emailed him out of the blue?
Cold email.
And what do you say? You know, introduced yourself?
The key, a lot of young lawyers ask when I tell the story, what did you say? The key is always writing in the email, saying something about, hey, you want to learn about them and what they're doing. If you ever ask for anything, you might as well just throw that email in the trash can. They're not going to open it and respond. But if you want to learn about them and get them to talk about themselves, the one thing all us lawyers know is we love to talk about ourselves.
Exactly.
So I got him to pick up the phone. I knew I had about 15 minutes before he lost interest. I could hear him, you know, cleaning his dishes and loading the dishwasher in the background. And I told him about this idea that we had. And he said, you know what? Me and Robert Shapiro were thinking about something very similar. You know, let's talk more. So,
weren't you afraid, Arya, that he was going to steal the idea? He was going to listen to you and he's going to go to Bob Shapiro and big money people and put it together and shut you out?
Oh, that's always a concern. But at the end of the day, ideas are not worth very much. It's the legwork and the hours that you spend day in and day out to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, the Facebook story is great to say how an idea was stolen, but it's very rare that an idea gets to somebody who has the wherewithal and the time to be able to execute it.
But they definitely had the wherewithal, so hopefully you had a tape recorder on the telephone conversation.
You know, I knew at the time Brian was chairman and CEO of LegalZoom, but I also knew that he was his involvement in LegalZoom was coming to an end. And so my thought was to get his input and maybe put me in touch with the right people. Turns out a year later and a dozen meetings back and forth, he decided to come out of retirement, bring the gang back together, and he got Bob Shapiro and Scott McDonald, their first marketing hire of LegalZoom, and we gave it a shot and started the predecessor of what became BizCounsel.
Well, we want to talk about that, about BizCounsel and about how it all progressed to the point it is today. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio KABC. Hey, listen to this sound, because we're gonna move on and not listen to music. If you want to listen to music, turn to FM. You're on AM 790 KABC. I'm Alan Gervie. You listen to Gervie's Law, and we are talking to Arya Feruzmand, who is the chief of customer experience for BizCounsel. And before the break, we were talking about how BizCounsel formed. We still haven't really talked, Arya, about what BizCounsel is. A lot of people are listening and they're saying, oh, this is so cool. This young guy gets together with these seasoned veterans, Brian Liu, Brian Lee, Robert Shapiro. They create this company. What is BizCounsel?
So BizCounsel started because the Bryans, as we call them, and Robert Shapiro, they did a fantastic job getting LegalZoom started and really to what it is now. I mean, it's a behemoth of a company. I think something crazy like one in every three LLCs in California are started by LegalZoom. And they did a great job of helping businesses get off the ground. And of course, we know that businesses, you know, that are Boeing size and larger, they can get access to attorneys no problem.
Right.
But there's this whole middle market that we saw of people who just have coffee shops, who have an e-commerce business, who run a small accounting firm, that they're in this weird middle ground where there's nobody to help them with their legal needs. Businesses that, you know, have a handful of employees.
There are people to help them, but they can't necessarily afford them, or they don't need that kind of legal intervention.
Of course. And a lot of times we would see them come to us and similar services when, you know, things were off the rails. Now they really, really need somebody. They're deep in a rabbit's hole, and now they need to spend tens of thousands of dollars on lawyers. Our goal was with BizCounsel to give small businesses access to lawyers to take care of their real legal needs. And we do that by giving them a dedicated attorney that they can turn to whenever they have a question, so they don't have to analyze, hey, is this question big enough that I should hire an attorney? No, I already know I have BizCounsel. I know I have my attorney that I like and I trust, and I can go get that question answered. So no legal issue becomes too big or too small for these businesses to run by an attorney.
Wait, you said no legal issue becomes too big. Aren't there some issues that do become big? Because when you talk about biz counsel, is it a retainer that people are paying?
Correct. You pay $89 a month, and that's for a year, and you have access to your dedicated attorney to review contracts, get work done at a flat rate, and also run all your questions by its unlimited consultations.
So if there are, let's say, documents or if there's litigation, something that involves more than what the attorney gets paid for, do they refer it out or how does that work?
So we have a network of lawyers that we work with to handle some matters that become a little bit more hairy, like the litigation matters. But we do offer that at a 20% discount of the attorney's rate. What we're trying to do is make these attorneys more efficient. I think a recent study came out that lawyers on average bill less than 2 hours a day. So we're trying to make these lawyers on one hand more efficient so we can bring the cost down for a lot of the small business owners.
So when you talk about that and you say you have a dedicated attorney, is that one attorney that you actually establish a relationship with? Is that attorney working for another firm? How does it work? Are you bothering that attorney if you continue to email them like all my clients do?
Not at all. So they are part of a separate law firm. We facilitate the system in which they work that makes them more efficient. And it's not a bother at all. The goal is to get these attorneys, and these aren't attorneys that are straight out of law school. They have to have 5 years of experience. They have to go to an ABA accredited law school. The most important thing, I think the hardest thing for some lawyers is the bedside manner. We have to really sit down and make sure that they have the right bedside manner to deal with clientele. But it's not a bother because these small business lawyers, they eventually build a large clientele of businesses.
Sure.
And once you build that trust with a small business owner, the next time a problem comes up, you know exactly who you're going to. You don't want to try to start a relationship with a new guy. You want to go to that same guy.
Exactly.
So when you need your contract redrafted, your service agreement looked over, you know the same person that you're going to, and you know that's your biz counsel attorney.
And if you have a question, it's easier to talk to someone who you have a relationship with rather than to introduce yourself and do the small talk. You can quickly ask the question, get the answer, and move on. One of the questions that I did want to ask, though, is you talk about these attorneys who are working for biz counsel. They're also obviously working for either their own firm or another firm. Do you have problems with other firms, or how do you recruit these attorneys if they're working for a firm and the firm says you can't do this, you're billing time for our firm?
Oh, of course. What we do is we go out to firms first that understand what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is change the way legal services are provided for small businesses. And changing that paradigm is a little challenging. But the law firms that get it and see that this is the future of how small businesses are going to access lawyers, they get it. And they understand that putting attorneys into a system like biz counsel ultimately is going to be not only profitable for them, but more efficient as well. It just takes somebody with a mindset who can look into the future a little bit.
And when you talk about these relationships with these firms, are you essentially partners with them, or are they just taking a cut, or are you just taking a cut? How do you make it attractive for these firms to lend out their attorneys, so to speak?
They're not being lent out in the sense that they're getting paid for the phone calls that they take. They keep all of the legal work that they do with their clients. The contract reviews and the consultations are provided free of service, but the monthly charge covers that. The thing is, we know that $89 a month, some people look at it and say, that's too cheap. What
right.
kind of service am I getting here? But I know that you as a small business owner, you don't have legal needs every single day. You don't have needs every week. The idea being is that the time that you need it, you may need it twice in one day and you may need it 2 days later. You want to know, you want to have that peace of mind that I know who to go to. I would think of it more so that you're paying $89 a month to have access to a trusted attorney,
yeah,
rather than what lawyer services am I getting for $89 a month?
Do you have to do big volume in order to justify the $89 a month?
Oh, of course. But what we've seen is that there is an outpouring of small businesses who really understand what we're trying to do and are desperate for legal services at an affordable rate. There are businesses that have been in place for 15, 20 years with tens and tens of employees that have never talked to an attorney, that have never had their service agreement reviewed. And I'm blown away by how they've made it this far. God bless them. But now they've seen, hey, this is an affordable way to have somebody to make sure we're doing the right things so that we can take our business to the next level and not hope and pray that we're doing everything right.
Now, talk about the marketing, because under these conditions, it's really hard to get the word out. I know, like I said, I mentioned Laura Wasser, and it's over easy that she promotes through social media. You're a tech-savvy guy, obviously, in the generation where it's easier for you to deal with technology than it is to deal with papers and everything else that a lot of lawyers deal with. How do you approach the marketing? How do you get the word out so that people will feel comfortable in contacting? And I'm assuming they contact Biz Counsel through a website?
Correct. They go to our website. They speak to one of our client relations team members that explains the process, connects them with one of our dedicated attorneys. And from there, we just kind of manage that relationship and make sure it goes forward from there. But it's amazing. I mean, social media these days, that's where everyone is. And that's where we do the bulk of our advertising, where a lot of these small businesses are looking. And it's funny, we notice that on the weekends and on the off hours outside of 9 to 5 is where we get a lot of hits. And that makes a lot of sense. These are legitimate small businesses who are working 9 to 5. And so the time that they have to go on Facebook is after they put the kids to bed and they got a 30 minutes to themselves.
Right.
So a lot of times you will see submissions come in late at night, and we follow up with them during business hours the next day.
Do you have a department that's dedicated to the marketing? Or is that an individual? You're the chief customer experience. So I kind of get it. You know, your personality is perfect for this job. Not only are you an attorney, but also obviously a people person.
Sure.
But marketing's kind of a different animal.
Of course. The nice part about what I do is I kind of explain it like you're playing poker. When you're playing poker, you're telling a story. And the story has to make sense at every stage. And if the story doesn't make sense, your opponent figures that out and calls you on your bluff. What I do is from the time you hit the website to the time that you talk to one of our team members to onboard you to the time that you speak with the attorneys, that story has to make sense. And what I'm conveying has to all jive together. And my goal is to make sure that that's one seamless experience. So the marketing side, how you get to the website, is handled by Scott McDonald, one of the first marketing hires at LegalZoom, and he's fantastic at that. But once you hit the site and go through the process, that's my world.
That's where you take over.
And I want to make sure that that's one uniform experience and you really understand what we're trying to do here.
So we have to take a break, but I just want to ask you this because you talk about the people who are involved. Brian Liu, Brian Lee, Robert Shapiro, are those guys still involved, or did they just help you form this, and have they kind of moved on to different projects?
No. So Brian Liu sits about 4 feet away from me every single day. Brian Liu, Kurt Brown, Scott McDonald, the four of the five co-founders, we sit right next to each other every day. I think we're building something that's very interesting. And also, I sleep well knowing that we can give a lot of these small businesses access to legal help that they didn't have before. So no, it's a very exciting and meaningful endeavor.
And how have you seen the evolution from start to now in terms of the word getting out and building the business?
Well, in the beginning, we thought it was just, hey, we have great small business lawyers on subscription, and people understood that and that did fine. But once we tapped into the mindset of the small business owner that we were dealing with, someone who's been in business for a few years, who's seen some things, who has some real legal problems around hiring employees or dealing with vendors, once we understood that what we're actually doing is giving them a level of peace of mind, that they have somebody in their back pocket, they have a lawyer on retainer now that they can go to whenever they need, that's when things really started to take off. We're taking that weight off of the shoulders of these small businesses who've just been kind of Googling things and hiring attorneys here and there.
Right. And it really is worth their while because they're not paying that much. Instead of spending their time Googling, they can talk to an attorney. We have to take a break, but after break, I just want to ask you a couple more questions because you mentioned the different legal specialties. One of the things that it begs the question as we're talking now is what specialties, if I'm a small business, what should I be thinking about? Because a lot of times we don't even know know the questions. I do as an attorney, but as a business owner, you're so caught up in your business, you don't know the questions. So I want to ask you that, and also want to ask you about trends that you're seeing in the law. They kind of dovetail together, what type of trends you're seeing with respect to small business and otherwise. So we'll talk about that after the break. And, of course, after the break, we'll also talk to Sameh Zoabi. He is the director of the film Tel Aviv on Fire. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. So what? That's my intro music? It wasn't even any intro music. I'm Alan Kirby. Oh, now we got some stuff happening here. We're talking to Arya Feruzmand. He is one of the principals and co-founders of BizCounsel. If you haven't heard of BizCounsel, go online, look it up. It's BizCounsel.com, Arya?
Correct, BizCounsel.com.
BizCounsel.com, and we're talking about how this young attorney kind of got fed up with the practice of law after about 10 minutes. And had the nerve to go to these really established business people, Brian Liu, Brian Lee. Eventually, you got to Brian Lee from LegalZoom and got this company up and running. And now you're servicing, Arya, all of these small businesses. It was $89 a month.
Correct.
They have access to lawyers for a number of different types of legal issues that come up with small businesses. A lot of people may not anticipate. As a lawyer, I'm always talking to my clients and they say, oh, I never knew that was going to happen. That's what lawyers do. Tell us about issues that may come up with small businesses that BizCounsel can help.
Of course. You know, a lot of the businesses that we talk to have been going on for a handful of years, and they've kind of pieced things together up until this point. And what I like to tell our onboarding team is when you get a new client, maybe this is a good time to dust off that old service agreement or that sales agreement or whatever agreement that you make your money on, because there may be changes to the law. You may have some provisions in there that don't jive with your current business practices. Essentially, every dollar you make goes through one of these main agreements. And the first thing I recommend people to do, because usually they come in for a very specific reason. I'm hiring this employee, I'm firing this employee. Is this legal to do? What's in this provision of this contract that this vendor sent? After we take care of that, I recommend, hey, let's look at the core of your business, which is usually a sales or service agreement, and make sure that's up to snuff. And once we have that squared away, you can start to see, hey, what are some other things that I should make sure are legal and correct and up to date so I can continue growing my business?
So another area that I think a lot of people are not as focused on as they should be, and it's sometimes too late, are employment manuals. Especially in this Me Too generation, a lot of people don't have the necessary employment manuals or the regulations, rules, whatever you want to call it. And they kind of put it on the back burner because it's not something that's top of mind until something happens.
Sure, sure. And that's becoming more and more relevant every single day. I've heard a crazy statistic that one in a handful of every lawsuits in LA Superior down the street is an employment lawsuit. And a lot of those lawsuits could have been prevented if you implemented the right strategies and practices early on. A lot of times we hear about how people are being paid, if they're exempt or non-exempt, and we look at their employee handbook and it's practically non-existent. So a lot of small businesses, when they get to us, there's a little bit of time that it takes and a little bit of effort that it takes on the small business to get everything squared away, like the employee handbook, like the employee manual. But once you take care of that once, maintaining that becomes a lot easier going forward.
What about workers' compensation? In California, the law is that you have to have workers' compensation, but there are some small businesses who unfortunately are not complying, or maybe their coverage lapsed or something. Do you ever have any questions about workers' compensation or whether someone is just consulting because they're not happy with, for instance, the insurance company's lawyer?
Correct. That happens all the time. And what we're frankly trying to do is pair with an insurance provider to help shore up businesses that don't have this type of insurance, that don't have what's called EPLI or employee practices insurance types of insurance that every business that has employees needs to have and should have, a lot of them don't. So we're trying to help them be compliant in other areas and in the insurance field as well.
Yeah. And when you talk about some of these areas, it really segues into what the trends we're seeing in law. Obviously, as a lawyer, I see trends. You more so because your world is so expansive given biz counsel and some of the issues that come up. What are you seeing in the trends in the law?
Right now, we're in a very interesting time. You're seeing more and more legal startups pop up than ever before. And I think you could put them in two buckets. One, they're making lawyers a hell of a lot more efficient from their day-to-day tasks of contract review, doc review, things like that, the mundane tasks, they're taking that over. And that's driving down the cost of legal services, which is great for the consumer and small businesses alike. And on the other hand, you're seeing products that are making lawyers more accessible. Previously, you had to walk into their office. Now you can call and email, but we're getting to the point of live chat, text messaging, being able to have attorneys accessible whenever you need them. I think it's not far-fetched to think in 5-10 years with services like ours and other services out there, people are going to look at you funny if you don't have a lawyer and you're running a small business.
Right. It's going to be more commonplace than it is now. You're just kind of groundbreaking with some of the other groundbreaking people like Robert Shapiro. Now, Bob was on the show last year talking about the Brent Shapiro Foundation. I know that he has his gala for the Brent Shapiro Foundation coming up. I believe it's September 21st.
Correct.
If I'm correct. Now, you've been going to that for the last 3 years. Obviously, you've worked with Bob Shapiro with Biz Counsel and with the partners. Tell us a little bit about that.
Bob is fantastic. Bob is a wealth of knowledge. I can't believe in his age that he's still works full time, still exercises more than any of us young bloods, still boxes. What he's doing with the Brent Shapiro Foundation is fantastic, and how he's helping all of these kids really find their way into college. And any way that we can support him in that, and he obviously supports us in our biz counsel endeavors as well, is fantastic.
And if you go to the website for the Brent Shapiro Foundation, you'll see some really heartwarming information and Bob and his wife talking about what happened, unfortunately, to their son, Brent, with a drug overdose, and how he has worked since that time to help prevent drug overdoses for kids who are really appreciating the kind of work that you're talking about. And that gala is September 21st, Brent Shapiro Foundation. And I think you're going to be there.
I'll be there.
Well, I'll see you there because we're going to go. We support his cause and we're supporting Biz Counsel here because I think it's a great idea to get people who wouldn't have access to legal assistance having such easy access. And that's really what it is. I'm not sure what the plan is, but I'm sure you're envisioning in five, and you mentioned 5 or 10 years, for it to explode.
That's the hope. That's the hope. I really believe that, like right now, if you're a small business owner without an accountant, people look at you funny. I really think the same is going to be for lawyers soon.
Well, that's a good way to end off our little talk here, because I think when you check back in a few years, I think you're right. I can see it. There's trends all over. Aryeh Feruzmon, I want to thank you so much for coming, talking about Biz Counsel today on Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we got to take a quick break. After the break, Samay Zoabi. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, we're back. Eye of the Tiger. You know, when we talk about hearing you roar, our next guest, I'm sure, feels proud of the film that he has made. And you can hear him roar. What a complex subject that he undertook. Now, we're talking about Samay Zoabi, who is the director of the film Tel Aviv on Fire. And a lot of people have to give him so much credit because it couldn't have been easy making this film. It's kind of a comedy about Palestinians and Israelis. And it's about Salam, who's a young Palestinian man who becomes a writer on a popular soap opera after a chance meeting with an Israeli soldier. And his creative career is on the rise until the soldier and the show's financial backers disagree about how it should end. And when we talk about making a film in Israel about Palestinians and Israelis, it's really something that we have to give you a lot of credit for. Sameh Zawabi, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with this idea. Now, you've made other films, and this has become an award-winning film. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, the Venice Film Festival. How did you come up with this idea and have really the strength to go forward with it?
Well, this is not my first comedy. My first feature, actually, was a comedy as well. But I guess, you know, if it was the first feature, so it didn't really... The comedy did not deliver all the way, but it was a successful film in the festivals among the audience. And the power of dealing with, you know, political, such sensitive political issues through comedy, I realized in many festivals around the world and screenings that it really has a special effect, because I realized people are really jaded with the Palestinian-Israeli issue, and somehow, you know, the interest is not just outside internationally, but even inside, people don't want to hear about it anymore because it's becoming so tragic. So I figured, like, the comedy is one way to tackle this issue, but it, in many ways, it was a very personal film for me, to be honest with you. It's, you know, I'm Palestinian who grew up inside Israel, so I hold Israeli citizenship, and I'm originally Palestinian, and you know, 25% of the population inside Israel are Palestinians. And I realized over the years, every time I wanted to make a movie, you know, I have to make my movie through Israeli funding and then European funding. But what's interesting about every time I write a script or I make a movie, there's always that discussion is because I take Israeli money, is my film becoming too Israeli and less Palestinian for the Palestinians? And for the Israelis, they, you know, they give you money and they want to make sure that you're not turning too Palestinian on them. And the Europeans always who finance our movies, so it's like kind of like always want to find a balance in that thing. So this dilemma of writing anything that deal with Palestine and Israel always have a heated response. And I thought, wow, that would be an interesting, you know, subject for a movie. And that's exactly where the genesis of all of this is, about an artist who trapped in a political situation where everyone wants to change the ending of a show.
Did you find that there were some obstacles or challenges saying what you really wanted to say? You've pointed out how there's this conflict or an apparent conflict. Did you have any problems? Did anyone try to mute you? Or is this exactly what you wanted to say in Tel Aviv on Fire?
You know, to be honest with you, no, I did the movie that I wanted to make. But it was in many ways, I mean, it has that, again, has that same dilemma playing in it. But what helped me, I guess, because the film was dealing with it. So every time there is a problem that could come up, you know, we find a solution or we found a new idea in the script to accommodate it. So it was actually a fun film to make in that process and see how through comedy you can actually maneuver around this pressure. So, and this pressure is not going to end. I mean, it's not just by making a movie about it, it's going to end. I think the discussion, even after making the film, is still viable. And
you know,
but for me, it was a very important film to make on a personal level.
Sameh, I saw you had quoted Charlie Chaplin saying that to truly laugh, you must be able to take your pain and play with it. Obviously, that's something that's important to you. Why do we not see that with more people with this really difficult conflict that we deal with every day in the Middle East?
Well, it's because it's very heated. I think, you know, I think people are always, and also we don't have we don't have a big industry as a film industry. So we are limited to certain films and certain topics to make. I mean, we rely a lot on European funding and that really limits what type of stories you can tell. I mean, I don't want to tell you that it was easy to make a comedy. It was the hardest to finance because it doesn't fit into this idea of an art house film because it's entertaining. If it doesn't deal politically with, you know, straightforward with political issues, you might not get the attention to be made. So that would be part of it, you know, the idea of how you make it and how the industry responds to this. And the other part, I think it's a very emotional subject, and it's very hard for people to step away and see the humor in it when you're in the middle of it.
Tell us about what happens in the film, obviously without giving it away, but how you've been able to deal with the conflicting perspectives specifically with this film.
Well, you know, the thing is, I grew up inside of Israel, right outside of Nazareth. So I speak both Arabic and Hebrew, and I went to Tel Aviv University to do my BA. So I spent a lot of time as a Palestinian, spent a lot of time with Israelis as well. And then I came to do my master's at Columbia University in New York. So I had, you know, some sort of a process of jumping around between narratives. So I was able to see how the Palestinians see the Israelis and how the Israelis see the Palestinians. And I think that helped me write the film because I know both cultures and both political views very well. And I can go jump back and forth. And the film is about that. It's about how, you know, Palestinian TV show, how they see the Israelis, right, the 1967 war, and how they portray the characters of an Israeli. And how an Israeli officer who wants to change that can wants the Palestinians to see the Israeli. And this kind of conflict of narratives between Israelis and Palestinians, it was the source of humor for me, and because it relies a lot on stereotypes and how each group see the other. And knowing it so well allowed me to tackle this issue with such sensitivity. You know, looking at the film, I see how that, the language, how knowing that reality very well helped me a lot.
What has been the response? Now, it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. Was it last September? And it was at the 75th Venice International Film Festival, received the Orizzonti Award for Best Actor. What has been the general response from the public?
It was amazing so far. I mean, we've been, my first screening was in Venice, and it was overwhelming. We had, 1,500 audience members. And there's always, remember, like, we were making a comedy. But I can tell you I'm making a comedy, but if the audience doesn't laugh, you know, it's not a comedy.
Right, right.
Anymore.
That's the joke's on you if they don't laugh.
But exactly.
People are laughing. People are enjoying it. Now, it's going to have a more widespread release. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, after all of this, you know, we did a lot of festivals, a lot of awards, and now we're arriving to the U.S. I mean, it was released in France and Europe just a couple months ago, and I just came back from Germany, actually, and it's doing amazing there. And now we're gearing up for the U.S. release, which I really look forward to it, because we started the release actually with, before the release, we started with some festivals like Seattle, Minneapolis, Saratoga, and you know, we had a lot of audience awards so far, and that's a good indication. I think that people here in the U.S. are enjoying the film as well, and not just enjoying, but also seeing the complexity of that conflict, and they see it in a different light. And my hope, you know, is just that the film brings some sense of hope that from a reality that doesn't show any hope, and hopefully that will change. Will change things on the ground as well.
Do you
never know how art could influence the reality?
That's right.
So
that's right. And do you think that there will be an educational process here in the United States for people who may not really have the understanding, which most people don't, especially the understanding that you do? But it really is something to have people understand what's going on through a comedy.
Absolutely. I mean, this is my hope. I mean, so far it's been like that. I think it was a lot of those moments that were you know, people have, even if they didn't have anything or have not heard anything, have not seen anything about the Middle East and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, they were able to understand, you know, how, you know, at the end it's you know, two people who share a lot in common are unable to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that's a tragedy of it. But showing it in such a optimistic way, I think hopefully will create a different discussion now. It's a much needed discussion.
And the education. The education and understanding are certainly a first step toward some more peaceful, hopeful, hopefully negotiations. And obviously, that's something that you can't do. But people don't understand there are other ways to attack it. Now, the film is released. Is it August 2nd?
Yes, it's August 2nd is the release of the film.
And are you going to be at a premiere, or how's that going to work?
Yeah, we're already going to have some screenings in New York. On August 2nd and 3rd, there are going to be some screening at the Landmark and the Quad, and there's going to be Q&As of those screenings. And in Los Angeles as well, and San Francisco, I will be at the Castro on Castro Theater on July 25th as part of the Jewish Film Festival there. And then in Los Angeles on the 29th, there's another screening at the Pacific Design Center on the 29th to promote like a word of mouth screening. And then it's going to theaters on the 2nd. So I look forward to it. I've been, you know, touring with the film and enjoying the response so far and the discussions.
Yeah.
I hope the audience will find the film intriguing.
You must be exhausted, and it's just it's just starting. When you have an opportunity to get to LA, are you going to come for the opening here?
Yes, I will be there on the 29th.
On the 29th. Okay. Well, we wish you all the luck with it. Hopefully it will be not only entertaining, but also an important start to better relations between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And thank you so much, Sammy, for coming on Gervie's Law to talk about the film. It's called Tel Aviv on Fire. And if people want to watch the trailer, where can they go to get that trailer?
Just to Google Tel Aviv on Fire trailer.
that's what you got to do. You got to Google. Easy. Tel Aviv on Fire. Not a lot of hits going to come up other than the film.
Exactly. Tel Aviv on Fire, the movie,
all right,
trailer. And there's a lot of, IndieWire just announced the poster and the trailer on the 4th of July. So it's going to be accessible to people. And I really hope it's a success here.
All right, Sammy Zoabi, director of Tel Aviv on Fire, thanks for being with us today. And
Thank you.
And that's going to end it for our show. We want to thank Arya Feruzmond, who is with Biz Council, for coming on Gervie's Law as well. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.